Hello, everyone. My name is Antoinette Lilly, and I'm here with a man who has always made me feel very full. Not only full as a woman, but full as a human being. And he's a marvelous storyteller, and I hope I can get him to tell you a story about swimming with our dolphins, Joe and Rosalie. I'd like you to meet Ramdas and Richard Alpert, whichever one he wishes to be today.
Dick, Rumdum, whatever is comfortable.
Hi. Hello, love. How are you?
I'm very nice. Yeah, it's good to be with you.
It's good to be here with you. You were swimming with Joe and Rosalie recently.
Absolutely. Absolutely. At your invitation.
Yeah.
Can I tell a story?
Yes.
Well, I got invited to swim with the dolphins in these tanks at Redwood City. Can I look at them, or should I look at you?
Well, I'd rather you looked at me.
Okay. Well, you know the story, though, but I'll tell you anyway. And because it's a different story if I tell you and you know.
All right. You want to look at the cameras?
So I'll make believe you don't know.
Okay.
Tony and John Lilly asked me if I'd like to swim with the dolphins, and I said I'd love to. So I found myself on this gray day in a bathing suit, not in a wetsuit, at this tank in Redwood City, and I got into the holding platform, and then I got into the water, so I was sort of treading water. And at that moment, I thought, what the hell am I doing here? Like, you know, you're supposed to want to swim with the dolphins, and I want to swim with the dolphins, and I think, oh my God, I'm a 50-year-old man, it's cold. What do you do with dolphins? And I'm trying desperately to remember all the stories about what you're supposed to do with dolphins. First thing that happened was that Rosalie made two very close passes by me. And I was aware they were very powerful and very big. And that kind of scared me. And I thought, I'm really out of my territory. But everybody was watching around the tank to see what Ramdas was going to do with the dolphins. So I knew whatever I did, I had a smile. Okay. So then I was trying to think of what to do. And Joe came over and he opened his mouth and he put it over my wrist. And every, like, Jaws fantasy I ever had, you know, when I saw this mouth closing around my wrist went by. And he took me very gently and he pulled me out into the middle of the tank and let me go. And it blew my mind. I mean, he just took me right out of my mind because nothing I knew with tails in the water did things like that, you know. And my model of what I expected wasn't that. So I went into a whole intuitive space in myself and my heart started open. The minute that happened and I went out of my intellect, Rosalie was right here. And I really wanted to touch her, but I was afraid she'd be bothered, you know. So I very gingerly did it, and she stayed right there, and I started to pat her, and she felt so good. You know how good she felt. And I realized she knows, I know, she knows. Like, we're both right here together, you know. And my heart opened further. And then right after that, Rosalie was up against me, and I was holding her. And she was holding me, and I was kissing her and saying, oh, Rosalie, I love you so much. My heart just went out. And then I began to think, are you allowed to do this with a dolphin? And then Rosalie went around, and she was right here, and what I wanted to do was swim with her. Now, I've never seen anybody swim with them. I mean, I probably had, but I couldn't think. So I wanted to take her back fin, and I thought I might break it. So I very gingerly took it, and she swam down, and I slipped off and came up, and she came up, and then I went down, and I slipped off, and she came back. Three or four times, I thought, this isn't going to work. I'll put my hand around her. But she's going to be bugged if I do this. You know, I'm coming on. You know? My mind again. So we started, and she started to get very active, and I thought, it's bugging her, and I let go, and she immediately came back in under my arm. In other words, she was just training me to let go of all my dumb thinking and just trust and go with it. So finally, I just grabbed her and we started to swim wildly around the tank. And it was better than any fantasy I'd ever had about what it would be like. And at a certain point, I thought, well, you know, I really got to breathe. And I don't think she knows that. You know, the minute I felt the need to breathe, she was up at the surface for the breath. And then we went down again, and every time I felt the need to breathe, she came up. And at one point she came up and somebody was taking a picture and I got into hamming it up and I forgot to take a breath. And I went back down again. And right after that, she came up again for me to get a breath. And after about 40 minutes, I was really tired and I felt this wave of fatigue. She came up, shook me off, went around the tank. Joe and she came over and pushed their noses against my belly and pushed me over to the holding platform and out of the tank, and they wouldn't let me back in the whole day. And I just feel like they're my great teachers. They're like teachers of teaching me about my intuitive heart.
So many people who swim with dolphins have experiences that somehow they get their humanness in perspective. You know, there's sort of a reflection of self that seems to happen.
I felt a lot like I felt with my guru in India. I felt it was the mirroring of non-judging awareness. You know, that they weren't seeing me as a fellow human being would see me. They were seeing me in a much more spacious way. They were seeing me like this, you know, just like that.
They also seem to be able to psychically absorb thoughts before you even think
them. That's what you feel like. You feel they're inside your head.
Right.
Yeah. And I don't think they're thinking about it. No. I think they are more responding to the fact that our thoughts are very subtle vibratory rates, too.
Right.
That send like things like that. When we go into our mind, we change our vibratory rate. And
children seem to react to dolphins in very natural ways.
Yeah.
And we're thinking of having a community of dolphins and humans, and hopefully we can do that in Mexico. I'm looking forward to that very much.
I can just imagine where mothers and their babies are right at the water's edge, and the dolphins and the babies start to play together in the hole. Because the babies, because they don't have such a heavy conceptual overlay, are absolutely optimum ambassadors across species.
I agree.
That's a nice one.
We had some young children that were swimming with our dolphins, and the dolphins related to the children differently when the mothers were in the pool with them.
Oh, that how?
Well, they were just a lot more cautious and a lot more quieter with them. As soon as the mothers left, they felt, it seemed
That's
that they felt freer.
They was responding to
play.
The children's thing rather than
right.
a little of the
Much
fear
more.
Or the tension of the parent.
Right. So they seemed
nice.
To be responding to the tension of the parents.
Yeah.
And that, again, made me realize how
also to the honoring of the relation between mother and child,
right.
which is a nice one, too.
Mm-hmm. I think they also feel differently about death. Somehow.
Yeah, well, I think they function in their awareness, not in time and space that way.
Right.
So the death and life, it's like one to me is life and death. It's they just see it as transformation of energy. I mean, I don't think they sit around thinking about it, but I mean, I think they dwell in that part of consciousness.
There was an orca recently, a killer whale up in Canada. I'd been with the ocean area for about 14 years, and they decided to let it go and get two younger orca. And before they let it go, the orca decided to die. They couldn't find any physical reason for it to die. And that made everyone think that they somehow knew what was going to happen, that the decisions made by the humans somehow were absorbed by the orca.
It's a nice story. It feels very possible. Although I don't want to project in this whole intellectual overlay that they think, well, they're going to let me go, so I'll die. I don't feel it could be at that level at all.
No.
And I think it's just a much more, maybe my work is done type thing. Oh, not even a consciousness, just a vibratory shift. That.
Wouldn't it be nice if we could die that way? And so many people never welcome it. We never think about welcoming death. We always think about holding it off. Or
we
resisting.
See death as an enemy, because we identify with form, and that form changes, and we're afraid of that. The minute we identify with that part of ourselves, which doesn't change, then death is just part of the forms changing. Life, you know, it's like when Ramana Maharshi was dying, and they said, "Don't leave us, don't leave us." He said, "Don't be silly. Where could I go?" You know, because you're identified with that part of you, that's just, and that's why. For people that want to awaken into that space, death is such a heavy drama. It's a beautiful melodrama to do it through because it's one that sucks you back into your separateness, like I'm dying. And to be with somebody who is dying, who's not caught in their own drama, is very special.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I love being with dying people.
Elizabeth Kubler-Ross told a story of this very young boy, I think he was 4, and he asked his mother to go home. He was dying. And he asked her to go home and take a shower because she looked very tired. And he died while she was gone. Mm. And Elizabeth felt that the child wanted the freedom to die joyfully.
Yeah.
Because he somehow was more connected to that than older people seem to be. I can well understand that if you're dying, you don't particularly want someone
around
hanging over saying, please don't leave me.
Who's caught in the drama. Caught in the drama.
Right.
So, like, one of the things we've done is created a center in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where people who want to die consciously can come, and where those of us that want to be with dying people to keep ourselves conscious can be, and so we take care of each other, and everybody gets a benefit from it, because there are no professional dyers. But it's nice to put those two together, and it's a beautiful experience. Everybody grows from it. It's a... Yeah. What I found was that that to the extent that I'm in a human body, I have fear of death because I'm separate. To the extent that I'm not, I have no fear of death. I used to go around saying, I'm not afraid of death, but I saw that isn't true. But I am afraid and I'm not afraid, both. And it seems to me what we bring to another human being is our truth. And I don't feel like I have to make believe I'm not afraid of death when I'm with somebody that's dying. I think that cuts them off from a part of their being. Mm-hmm. Just to be with them the way they are is nice.
Well, I've had quite a journey this last year because, of course, I found out that I had cancer. And I went through every conceivable kind of kaleidoscope of feelings.
I bet you did. That's a good one, isn't it? It really pushes all the buttons, doesn't it?
It pushed every single button imaginable.
Yeah, I know. It's a good one.
And in a sense, I'm thankful for it because I have lived more fully this last year.
It's like Don Juan talks about living with death on your left shoulder and how it enriches the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what the Easterners know, because they always live their life in relation to their death, not in a morbid way, just in a very aware way of the preciousness of the moment. Because who knows when you're going to die? I mean, we both may die, you know, at the end of this moment together.
Right. So life then can be a preparation for a sort of graduation.
Exactly. In fact, it's interesting because the Easterners, you're only graduating on one level. At another level, you're just going on.
Yeah.
You know? But the Easterners do see life as a preparation for how conscious you are at the moment of death. And since you don't know what moment it is, you might as well practice by being conscious now. Because this is it. We're dying. Now there's a new moment. Now this one just died. Now there's a new moment. One of these will drop our body. Ah, no body. We're still here.
Rent the body.
It's very far out when you realize you can blow your brains out and you're still here. See, that's what people, because everybody got caught in the left brain, right brain, you know, that's where we really are.
Yeah.
That's all nonsense, really. That's the form through which it manifests. But the brains get eaten by worms and awarenesses are still there. I have this great friend, Emmanuel. He doesn't have a body. He speaks through a woman named Pat Rodegast. I said to him, Emmanuel, what'll I tell people about dying? He says, tell them it's absolutely safe. Which is a delicious line. He said, it's like taking off a tight shoe. I mean, who could ask for a friend better than that, you know?
A tight shoe. Oh.
And you can feel how when you're crammed in any form, the form is only part of it. And actually, you're all of it. It's only your definition. When you identify with a form, you immediately define what you're not.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And all of our needs of I want and I need and oh, please, and oh, and all that, it's all part of still defining yourself as a have-not.
Mm-hmm. You know, I have a feeling, almost a knowing, that dolphins have some kind of a head start on that. And the experience that I have with the beluga whale that I wrote about was this very thing, a sort of a glimpse of a spiritual domain that I could only grasp just for a couple of seconds.
Mm.
But in that domain, there is nothing but that.
Yeah, I understand.
Awareness.
I think you will get that, though, if you spend long enough with a candle flame or a river or the stars or a deer or a cat. Beings that are just part of the Tao, part of the way of things, without the self-consciousness that makes them kind of edgy, mm-hmm. like us humans.
Mm-hmm.
I get a sense of, it allows you to tune to that part of you that is, that doesn't have definition.
But on the spiritual level,
yeah,
compared to the physical, could it be that because they've been here so much longer, they've had time on the physical level to work something out so that they are closer to that?
Well, see, I don't know about the game closer and further away. That's
right.
A funny game, you know, and I don't know that, like, are we more than the dolphins, and the dolphins more than us? I'm not sure it's productive to figure that out.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel I get a great teaching from it. And if I hope it's useful to them to be with us, you know, for whatever they have to do in an evolutionary sense. We're all in an evolutionary journey to decide who's where. I couldn't figure it out, you know. I don't know that I learn more from them by thinking they're ahead of me than to think that they are just doing their work and they are an instrument for me to do what I need to do.